Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, Sean Clayton.
And good morning on this sunny, a little chillier, kind of more fallish type day on a Friday. Made it through another week, and I hope you're all set for a great, great weekend. Couldn't get any better in sports than what we have this weekend, because you got college football. You've got a big series with the Mariners taking on the Yankees. Seahawks open their season up on Sunday against Denver. So we've got the five biggest stories of the day. Top five is brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
This happens to be a challenging matchup just because of the style of play, the way they run the ball, the way they play defense, the players that they have, the fact that Denver was able to get Case Keenum last year, going to bring great stability and leadership and all of that. We've worked through the preseason of it and checked it all out. And we know that there'll be some surprises in the early part of this game, really on both sides of the ball. Both teams will, and so we have to be ready to adjust and adapt. So it's a pretty basic plan as we go into it, but one with where we know we can make some adjustments if we have to tailor to what we need to do to get the game won.
That's Pete Carroll talking about the injury situation, and I'll be honest, I'm concerned about the injury situation, and I think Pete should be too, because there's a breaking point when you have so many, and again, it's not like there's a whole big group of injuries. I mean, what, they got about five on the injury list, but when you think about all the changes, all the losses in free agency, trades, and all those different things, I mean, it can hit at some critical point. You know, Dante Johnson, they need him to be able to play. He's got a hip injury, did not practice yesterday, and that means that, you know, they'll either go with Nico Thorpe or Trey Flowers if Johnson can't go, but they're not ruling him out yet. We'll see how it goes after 1 o'clock when the practice ends and Pete talks about the injuries. DJ Fluker doesn't look good at being able to play. And again, that was the concern. And I'll ask this to Maura, because I know we were talking about this all the way from the OTAs through the mini camp and that. I mean, Fluker's so big at 343 pounds, and we noticed he had the ankle problem, he had the knee problem, and all those things. And it's like, you wonder, can he make it through 16 games? And here it is, game one. J.R. Sweezy may be at right guard and not DJ Fluker.
Yeah, I know. From the beginning, I was really excited when he came. We were looking at the fact that when he was in for the Giants last year, they averaged 25 more rushing yards a game with him. But yeah, you mentioned having other injuries last year. He also had a toe injury, and it just seems like it's a fairly consistent thing. So I think he has a lot of potential. I think his size is a huge advantage for them, but hopefully they can keep him healthy and get him out there this year.
Mm-hmm. Jaron Reed added to the injury report with a sore knee. Don't think that's going to be too big of a deal. Deion Jordan still limited in practice, but at least he's practicing, so you would have to think he's going to get out there to do some things. But overall, big game coming up to see where this team is, and I think that's the one thing when you look at this Seahawks team, there's so much you just don't know. Where's it going to be? They're so young on defense. Is Earl Thomas going to be able to play? I mean, certainly that would be a big help as far as everything. And this is no knock on Tedrick Thompson, but, you know, particularly if you're coming in and you've got Shaquille Griffin over on one side playing a new side, and you've got a change at the other cornerback position. You know, Bradley McDougal now looks very comfortable at the strong safety or the free safety, wherever he's needed to go. But, you know, having Earl back there would be interesting. But, you know, how many plays, if Earl's going to play, is Earl going to play? As each day passes, though, I think that if he continues to warm up like he has in the with the management, then maybe he can be able to stay, and maybe down the line they'll be able to do something. Hey, we're going to also find out about the Broncos. Broncos had a very disappointing season. Tyler Palumbas will be able to join us here at 11 o'clock to talk about the Broncos. We'll continue to talk about the Seahawks, and we'll continue to give you updates on what's going on the injury front.
Number two.
We're talking about events that, you know, many people thought they would be passed by now, and clearly they're not, you know, and that's relevant to this offseason in particular, because everything changed, because people are gone, because the defense is different now. And because this may have been Russell's team already, but if it wasn't, it for sure is for the next 2 years. When we looked at how a great defense was taken apart, what stood out to me is the fact that this stuff is still percolating, it's still there, and it speaks to the entire operation.
It does, and of course, I mean, that's a big story that came out in Sports Illustrated. Great reporting by Robert Klemko, Greg Bishop, kind of a combination of MMQB and also Sports Illustrated. And basically, the story comes down to, the fact that some guys in the team just were mad about Russell Wilson, mad at Pete Carroll for not having special, I guess you could say, special way that he treated Russell Wilson. But, of course, one thing I continue to say is that, hey, that's the case in a lot of quarterbacks. But what the players were upset about, and again, I think what this does, it speaks to the competitive nature of the defensive players. And it's, I think you can put this mostly on the defensive players, that Richard Sherman being one. I thought it was interesting that they reported there was a near fight between Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett. Bennett was sticking up for Russell Wilson. Richard Sherman was against. And I think it's pretty well acknowledged right now that Richard had some problems, with Russell, and that's one of the reasons he's probably not here. And so the one thing that was in the story is that at Sherman's wedding, they toasted and said, "We're simply toasting his nuptials in paradise." Some that were also saluting his escape to San Francisco, away from the Seattle organization, and a handful of players who referred in private to the Titanic for the better part of a year. So it goes into the dramatic changes. Good story to be able to read. You'll be able to hear Greg Bishop. He was on the air talking about it. You heard his voice just a few minutes ago, at least on Brock and Salk. And so, again, I guess you can say the run pretty well ended last year for this team. Now it's a reset. It's reset with Russell Wilson, a whole dynamic group of players on defense. We'll see where it goes starting Sunday.
Number three.
Like I said, I'm anxious to play these guys because it's a completely new challenge. Mm-hmm. I mean, they use a fullback. They use multiple tight ends.
A fullback?
Exactly. they got three big wide receivers. And so I can't wait to see our guys line up against this. And the second thing is on defense, a lot of different stuff. I mean, Alvin kind of lined up and played, and we knew where they were going to be and all those things. And this is a different strategy, so we'll see as we move forward.
Okay, so that's Chris Peterson talking about tomorrow's game against North Dakota, the home opener, and first meeting between these two teams. North Dakota defeated Mississippi Valley 35-7 last Thursday. It's an FCC program, and it's transitioning into the Missouri Valley Conference, which is going to begin play back in 2020. Huskies still in pretty good shape as far as the rankings. They entered the week 6. They dropped to 9. I know in the AP poll, they were 6 going in with the coaches poll, so that's good. Washington, 16 consecutive home victories and in non-conference games. So next week they travel to Utah as they start the Pac-12 schedule, but nevertheless it's going to be a very big day for the Huskies as they try to get back to 1-1. Tough loss last Saturday against Auburn. Miles Gaskin became the UW's all-time leading rusher, moving past Napoleon Kaufman, who held the record since 1994. Boy, it's been that long since Napoleon Kaufman has been on board. So Huskies face North Dakota 2 p.m. tomorrow, home opener for the Huskies.
Number four.
WNBA Finals begin tonight at Key Arenas. The Storm hosts the Washington Mystics, a best-of-5 game series. Game 2 will be in Seattle on Sunday, so 2 games this weekend for the Storm.
And so a big Storm now going for the WNBA final. What a great game that was Tuesday, beating the Phoenix Mercury. Great performance by Sue Bird. Great comeback, and they ended up winning by 10 points, taking the series 3-2. Mystics come in. First ever WNBA finals. The Storm have won 2 of these things, and during the regular season, the Storm had the advantage over the Mystics. And so now Sue Bird comes in, had that broken nose, but she's now trying to get back to that championship. They come back and they play again on Sunday at 12:30, but again, here's going to be in the Key Arena. Chance for the Storm to at least get off to a good start and maybe start to clinch a championship for this city.
Number 5.
What I want to do is say, what about Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, and Matt Ryan? That's what I want to do, but it just keeps not happening. Is it supporting cast? Is it because he doesn't get the running game that he needs? Is it, he's got great players around him, and I want Matt to step up and make, to make that last drive and put it in the end zone. I know it's a lot to ask, but go win those games. Matt's been playing great football for a long time, but there is something about that last bit of, getting to Everest, that last base camp all the way to the top, that Matt needs to just climb himself.
Well, Steve Young kind of questioning Matt Ryan and Matty Ice maybe melting down a little bit with the offense. But I'll tell you what, I'll throw this to you, Maura. Who had the better throwing day? Was it Matt Ryan? Was it Nick Foles who threw for 117 yards? Or was the officials who threw 26 flags? Both quarterbacks had 50%. It's the officials. 26 penalties. You got to be kidding me. That's unbelievable. And then the one that was brutal was the one play down the right sideline that Julio Jones looked like he made the catch. He was on his back. The ball was in his hand. And again, they screwed up the catch rule again. And so where is this? It's like, now what football move is going to be made by a receiver who falls on his back to make a catch and the ball's still sitting in his hand and wasn't dropped? I mean, unbelievable. This is the and again, there was no helmet hits, I guess penalties of that nature. And so that was good, but it was a bad football game. 18-12 was the victory for the Philadelphia Eagles. Foles getting the drive right in the final 2 minutes of the game, or final 3 minutes of the game, to get the victory. But the big problem was Matt Ryan in the red zone, and this goes to Steve Sarkisian. I know that was brought up. It's like, what do Mike Zanino and the Falcons' red zone offense have? Well, they both go 1-for-20, and that's been the case now. 1-for-20 in the last 20 times Matt Ryan's been in the red zone to get a touchdown. Unbelievable. So, Julio Jones was able to get 180 of the passing yards. He did very well. Devontae Freeman left the game with a knee injury, but he was okay. It looks like Carson Wentz is now probably going to miss most of this month. Now, one of the great parts about Friday is the injury reports start coming in, and most teams are in pretty good shape. Nothing big from the Buffalo Bills. Jacksonville has everybody healthy. New York Giants, though, big blow. Olivier Vernon is out with an ankle injury, and so the debut of him as a linebacker in that 3-4 blitzing scheme is not going to be there. So that means they've lost Vernon for this week, and they've lost Jason Pierre-Paul for that trade to Tampa Bay. But we'll keep you updated on the injury reports. And so football is back, and we're all excited about that. You can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will try to get you under further review and break down that article with Greg Bishop. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
Well, I think this is pretty predictable what we're going to review. And, of course, it was a big story that came out. SIMMQB, Robert Klemko, Greg Bishop, talking to players anonymously, trying to get the feel. And, of course, what it looks like is that you've got, I would have to think Richard Sherman being heavily involved in this, and others that basically thought that Russell Wilson was a player that, was not being accounted for by Pete Carroll. And so he thought he got special treatment. And again, I think what it just shows, the competitive nature of this team. This is my analysis of all this, because say what you want, one of the great parts about the Seahawk run was the fact that they had so many alpha males that cared so much about winning. But in some ways, I think it came down to the point now where it created more tensions. And you go back to the Seth Wickersham story of last year and how the tensions were in the locker room. I know this one even takes it further by really talking about different things, like, for example, I'm going to Richard Sherman's wedding, and all of a sudden, and toasting the fact that it's just wild that where this story came out. And of course, I guess the big thing that is really, let's go to Greg Bishop. He was on with Brock and Salk, talking about the situation and the details that came out in this story today.
Greg, you have covered other quarterbacks. Again, I'm reminded of the number of different stories, and we've loved having you in, Greg Bishop, here with us from Sports Illustrated, telling the stories of Brett Favre out on his ranch in Mississippi, and Aaron Rodgers, and Tom Brady back there in New England. You've profiled all these guys. Is this situation that unique? Is you've dealt with those quarterbacks at that level and some of the challenge they have relating to their coaches and within their programs and everything else that franchise quarterbacks bring to the table. Do you find the circumstances here from a team dynamic really that much different or unique compared to some of those other profiles?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question, and it's come up a lot, obviously. I'd say a couple of things there. The first is we definitely address that notion in the story for the people that read it. We talk about how I think that every quarterback in the NFL, you could argue, is treated differently in some way or another. I think what's different about the Seahawks is that I think it's louder. I think it's more public. I think it's stronger than anything I've dealt with in the 16 years that I've been doing this. And I also think that the Seahawks had so many defensive stars that the dynamic is different. It's not like the Patriots have six Pro Bowlers on defense who can say that they're at the same level as Tom Brady. Instead, they've got Tom Brady and a bunch of people who are sort of falling in line behind that, who are reconfigured and changed every single season. And so to me, the dynamic is definitely different, and the way that some of the people in the room have reacted to him is definitely different. And I think it's at a higher, more extreme level.
So that's Greg Bishop, and I think that you know, he captures it pretty well. That and I guess, and this is the problem, I guess, when you're together, you know, 5 to 8 years with the same group. Of course, Russell Wilson came in 2012, and you know, there's always going to be a different dynamic at quarterback. And I even go back to Pittsburgh with Ben Roethlisberger. There was so much of a time when the players did not like Ben Roethlisberger. I know that Hines Ward, you know, his best receiver for so many years, you know, always had problems with Ben Roethlisberger. But it's a matter that it's like, hey, you accept the fact that he's your quarterback and he's the one that can win, and say what you want. I mean, as great as this defense was, and in his first Super Bowl year, it was the sixth or seventh best defense of all time. You take that pride, but still, ultimately, it's the quarterback who gets you over the top and the quarterback who gets you to the Super Bowl. Hate to say that for the defense of players, but that's the reality in the National Football League. And to think the quarterbacks are treated differently, it's like, duh, they are. And so that's just going to be a reality. But I guess, as you know, as players accept and think about that, I mean, is Pete Carroll going to call out Russell Wilson? He does it occasionally. What do you do this year? I mean, he brought in Brian Schottenheimer to call him out a little bit more if things aren't going right, and have one voice calling him out. But in the case, I guess, you know, the one thing that almost led to the fight with Sherman and Michael Bennett was that a bad game and not getting criticized and all that stuff. Hey, that's just part of it. And again, that's just the style that Pete Carroll has. But to hold it so far against him, I don't know. To me, that's a little bit too much. But again, it's what was existing in that locker room. Now, Russell Wilson has come back, and at least you can say to a certain degree, he's now come out today on social media. And so, Maura, what did Russell Wilson kind of say in after response to this story by SI?
Yes, he obviously didn't say that this was a response, but with the timing, you would have to think that he's kind of trying to counteract this story a little bit. On his Trace Me site, he just posted a story called A New Season, and basically he's just writing about how grateful and thankful he is to be getting back out there again. But there is a funny line, you know, just with this story coming out, that says, surrounding yourself with the right people is highly important in order to succeed. And he calls out a lot of his teammates by name: Doug Baldwin, KJ Wright, Dwayne Brown, the Griffin brothers, Bobby Wagner, and just talks about their leadership and how great they are. And then at one of the last paragraphs, he really talks up Pete Carroll and how important he is. So it just seems like maybe it's very standard Russell Wilson, very positive, very optimistic, but it also seems, you know, like it could be trying to counteract this story a little bit.
Yeah, I think that, no question. And of course, it's one of those things. Well, hey, well, you guys that are no longer here, I'm sticking with the guys that are there. And so it's kind of explosive in the sense that, you know, if you're Russell and you're hearing these things. But honestly, you know, we've heard these rumblings now for several years. It's just been there. But quarterbacks are going to be treated differently if they're criticized or not criticized. Listen, look at last year. You know, Russell didn't finish as great in the final in December. Up until December, he was considered to be an MVP candidate. And now I think in the offseason, there's been kind of a league-wide appreciation for how good Russell Wilson is. And so, you know, I don't know what more they wanted from Russell Wilson, you know, as a, because again, he gives everything out on the field. I mean, but nevertheless, there seems to be some bitterness. I mean, what do they want us to do? Stand in front of the court and say, oh, I am guilty of that interception. I am guilty of this bad play. I should have not run out of the pocket too fast. It's like, it's just almost a little bit too much. But hey, that's the work environment. That's something that now has crept in there, and it has apparently caused problems. Now we see how bad the problems were, and it's now led to this almost, you know, this reset of the team and reset of the attitude. That's why it's going to be so curious to see how this goes with Earl Thomas, because now at least you thought, okay, he wants Dallas, he wants traded, he wants this, he likes Dallas on Instagram and all that stuff. But, you know, if he comes back and is, you know, quiet in showing that he wants to be here, that I think now they can embrace that, get him back on the field, and the team's going to be a better team with him. But if he has the same resentment as some of the defensive players that's there, then that's going to be a big, big problem. But it's a great story. Try to read it on SI and .com. It's you know, brought out there by Greg Bishop, Robert Klemko. Very interesting to see how that story broke down. But again, it's like your quarterbacks are going to be treated differently. I mean, you notice that there's no other trainer in the building for the New England Patriots. Not you don't have you know, offensive linemen having, you know, you don't see Shaq Mason having his own trainer like Alex Guerrero. You don't have Rob Gronkowski having, no, the quarterback Tom Brady has it, even though Bill Belichick doesn't like it. And so that's just quarterbacks being treated differently. It is what it is, and players don't like it. But sometimes, as long as you win, it works. If you don't win, it causes problems. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, big series for the M's as they take on the Yankees. Shannon Dreher joins us to talk about that. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
And joining us right now on the Venue Kings hotline is Shannon Dreher. And so, Shannon, big series now coming up as the Mariners take on the Yankees. I mean, I would imagine there's going to be a genuine excitement right now with the fact that the Yankees are in town and all those different things. And, I mean, again, big pressure on this team to try to win. How do you think the team now with the day off goes in mentally into this series?
I think the day off without question helped. I think that anytime you have that, it gives you that opportunity just A, to rest, which is important, especially this late in the season, but also to reset. And obviously they've had a rough week, and you can go back a little further, all the way back to Oakland and the road trip where things just kind of piled up a little bit. So it was actually good. A couple of good things to see in the clubhouse before the day off is A, they were coming off of a win. And we talked about it on the post game show, but you could hear it in the interviews that we had after the game. There were guys in the background kind of yelling at each other in a good way, having fun. You could hear them playing pool in the background. And Ryan Rollinsmith commented that that's a good sign because when things aren't going well or not really clicking in a clubhouse or if there are real problems, guys are just getting out of there as fast as they can. And that didn't happen after that last game. So hopefully guys were able to kind of decompress a little bit yesterday and, you know, obviously a tough series ahead of them right now. But I think that payoff really could not have come at a better time.
Yeah, no question about that. And, of course, as I get this big three-game series and one that now pretty well ends, I guess. I think I get two games against the Padres. Almost it's everything else for the most part is going to be division games. You have a few more non-division games, but again, it's tough against the Yankees. But the Yankees come in, you know, they've lost three out of their last four, and so you know, they're not coming in the best of shape.
No, and I think they're probably experiencing what the Mariners experienced down in Oakland, and probably a little bit of surprise in their eyes, too, that they were able to go in there, because I think you look at that team and everybody's looked at them. They can't possibly keep up the winning percentage that they have, and they have. They can't possibly survive the loss of not just two starters, but your number one starter included in that. And they have, and I think that they probably experienced a little bit of a different atmosphere in Oakland and that they pull in big crowds down there as well. So I'm going to think that that was kind of a draining series for them as well, and they're going to be looking at the Mariners right now saying, okay, we need to get right here, that it is going to be a little bit different. Now, I think the Mariners will have some decent crowds for this, as people like to come out for the Yankee games. It's a fun time to have, but they're going to get a team that was beat up a little bit in Oakland, but also a team that I think is happy to get out of there.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. And again, I know you mentioned this yesterday, but one of the things that was so good about the Yankees, particularly in the early part of the season, was their pitching. And again, I thought that they really, I think, did not do a job of picking up, I think, maybe the right type of starter. But Luis Severino was so good. I mean, he was among the top maybe four or five pitchers in the league, and he has really struggled.
He has in the second half. And, you know, he had an absolutely brilliant first half. And you have to wonder if fatigue is a factor, if wear and tear throughout the season is a factor. They're still sending him out there every game, but he's had a rough go of it in the second half. The Mariners will not be facing him. The A's were able to get to him, but, you know, that can have, even when he's not on the hill, that can have an impact on the rest of the team, because he was one of the guys. There was no question that he was, you have guys that are kind of your win day, that when you see their name written into the lineup or for the next day, or you know what the probables are coming up, and you see that one coming up, you feel pretty good about going to the ballpark on that day. And so that's been a second half adjustment for them that they haven't had kind of their younger phenom, and he hasn't been as effective as he has in the first half. And I think if I'm a Yankee fan, it's concerning that you see such a big drop-off, and you kind of want to know the whys. They keep running him out there, so whatever it is can't be serious. They wouldn't run him out there, I'm sure. I don't think any team would if they were truly injured, but you know, there's something going on there, it would appear.
Yeah, no question, and that's going to, you know, hurt them out. And of course, you know, with one big injury that they have on with their hitters, it's like it does take away a little bit because, man, I mean, you got one of the best young players in baseball still waiting to get back from his injury.
They do, and you know, he's getting closer and closer. He's swinging a bat, and you're talking about Aaron Judge, of course. And so that's another thing that can kind of pick up a team that they know that they're getting that guy back. They got Gary Sanchez back last week. They are expected to have Didi Gregorius in Seattle. So, you know, this is something that they've been looking forward to. I know what that feels like because that's what the Mariners clubhouse felt like when that, you know, those weeks leading up to knowing that you were getting Robinson Cano back. So those are things that can energize a team a little bit, or they can kind of make you sit back and just like, okay, we're going to be okay. We just have to hold on until these players get here. But they're getting closer and closer to full strength.
Okay, so getting back to full strength, where's it stand right now for Marco Gonzalez?
He's throwing bullpens. We are not going to see him in the Yankees series. I'm not sure that we will see him in the San Diego Padres series. It would appear right now that maybe they're holding him back until they get into those division games on the road. But the bullpens that I talked to him afterwards both went well, and we'll have to see what happens from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, of course, they need as much starting pitching as they can, particularly down the stretch as it is. So that's one that you can see. Kind of an interesting thing, you know, and I think every week when Jerry DePoto gets on Danny David Moore, he says a few interesting things. And, of course, one of the subjects that came up yesterday was Nelson Cruz. And, you know, he did say, hey, they definitely want to get him back, but they're waiting to see toward the end of the season how Cruz feels and, you know, where this team is. They've got to reevaluate it. What do you think that, you know, Jerry's kind of pointing to it? You get to the season and kind of reevaluating, I guess, where this team is and where it's going to be with Nelson Cruz.
Well, I think that's a tough one because my stance on Nelson Cruz has always been you lost Robinson Cano for part of the year, and that was out of your control. You lost one of your best hitters from your lineup, and this is a lineup that has struggled greatly. You have control over losing Nelson Cruz, and this is something that I would have liked to have seen locked up earlier. And what Jerry is talking about is, I think, you know, where does everybody play next year? Do you fill up that DH spot with a guy that is going to exclusively DH? And, you know, these are decisions that you know, does this happen if you lose Robinson Cano at the beginning of the year and, you know, D. Gordon, if you don't lose Robinson Cano at the beginning of the year, D. Gordon has been playing center field all year. You know, just how much in the air does it throw things that you have been moving around players so much? And he says that they want to keep, everybody wants Nelson Cruz, you know, that would seem to me to be something that you would be able to take care of quickly. There was a lot of talk of doing it last off season. I know that there was actually a structure for a deal last off season, and it didn't happen. So, you know, there was a lot more that I think goes into it than just, yes, of course you want that bat in your lineup. And then another part of that is, what does Nelson want? Yeah, he is a free agent. He has the power to choose. And the fact that it gets to the end of his deal, you know, that makes it, you know, that puts some risk into it. He had an opportunity to lock it up and not lose him. And the closer he gets to free agency, are there other things that might attract him to other teams? Now, the good news on that, there's a good news and a bad news on that, is he's going to be limited in where he goes, obviously, as he is a DH that does not play the field very much. So, you know, that's in the Mariners' favor. But kind of the scary thing, if you look at it, is, you know, what team really needs a DH right now or could use a DH going forward next year? And that would be the Houston Astros. And that's something that I think everybody would absolutely hate to see. So, you know, you hope it's something that can get settled sooner rather than later. And you can figure out, you know, what this offense is going to look like next year. Because you look at what happened this year, and I think it's unfortunate that you've seen the struggles that you've seen. I think that one of the things that Jerry DePoto has touted, and on paper it looked great, was almost everybody's coming back. You know, you have built a lineup that is capable just having an incredible length that is capable of wearing out pitchers that is mostly signed through next year. But they didn't do it in the second half. So I think there is some back to the drawing board right now. And how does Nelson and his spot fit into that? And how does everything fit together? So I think that, you know, a year ago it was pretty easy with everything on paper in front of you to look at it and go, yeah, of course, this fits. And seeing it in practice in the second half, I think you've really got to dive into what didn't work before you make the future commitments at this point.
Okay, so now let's kind of go through some players to see if there's going to be any type of lineup changes. And, of course, I mean, again, so much of it goes to hitting. Let's kind of start with Mike Zunino, who has continued to struggle at the plate.
He is in talking to so many people, from coaches to scouts to people who have played the game, to pitchers on the staff, I'm just absolutely convinced that he is completely invaluable to this pitching staff. And part of it is because of the makeup of the pitching staff and the way that they do things. If you had just a bunch of stuff guys that were all veterans that were just, you know, throwing 98-mile-an-hour fastballs, it would be one thing. But you've got a group that has to use all of their pitches, that has to use scouting reports, that has to use heat maps, that need to read swings throughout games. And Mike Zunino is absolutely fantastic at that. It's not just dealing with one. It's dealing with many of them. And what he has been able to take on in that, I think, is you're not going to find that with most. You can have a good defensive catcher who is a good framer, who throws runners out. But the way that he knows the staff, the way that he knows the system, what they want to do with him and what they use and how he's able to take it all on and the leadership that he brings on top of that, I don't think that you can go elsewhere. And Scott Service had a good point. And he said, you know, of course they would like more offense from Mike Zunino. Of course they would like him not to strike out as much. And there may be things that have hurt him at the plate. You know, he may have still had issues with that oblique from the beginning of the year. That may have limited him a little bit. But when you look around the game, there aren't very many top-notch defense and top-hitter-type catchers out there. Catching is at a premium this year, right now in the game. There aren't a ton of them. And you can say, well, yeah, this guy hits 250 and we'll take that. Is that worth what you're giving up elsewhere? And, you know, as tough as it is to see the strikeouts right now, I don't think that they are looking at moving on from that.
Okay, well, that's good stuff, Shannon. And, of course, interesting to listen over the weekend. Yankees come to town. Shannon Dreher, good luck. Have a fun time.
Thank you. Should be fun.
Yeah, it should be. Shannon Dreher, join us in the Venue Kings Hotline. You can check out the show in a 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we go behind the lines in the first day, in the first aftermath of the game between Atlanta and the Philadelphia Eagles, along with injury report. Lots of stuff to talk about. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Vaughn Miller, that dude, that guy, he's like watching the movie The Matrix. Like, he defies gravity. He is a freak show. And Effetti is the one guy that I've looked at on tape on this offensive line that is, I mean, struggling. To say, I'm being kind. When I say he is struggling, he is struggling. So you're going to have to find a way to protect Vaughn Miller. That's the side he rushes from, because you cannot leave Effetti one-on-one with Vaughn Miller. He will be, he'll have to have counseling after that.
That's Mark Schlereth talking about the game coming up here with the Seahawks going against the Denver Broncos. And Effetti, and I think everybody in this town knows he's been struggling. Now, he came on a little bit. Now he's fighting a little bit of an ankle injury. He is expected to play and expected to start. We'll get the final word from Pete Carroll a little bit after 1 o'clock today. But no question. And, of course, you know, now it's also a combination of the two. And that's going to be for the next 2 weeks. Because, I mean, you look at the fact that, you know, Brandon Chubb was the first-round pick. And so now the Broncos start out with two pass rushers that can, you know, total more than 20 sacks. And the next week on Monday night, Leonard Floyd and Khalil Mack are two guys that can come over and combine for more than 20 sacks. So the pressure is going to be on the tackles. You know that Dwayne Brown's able to respond. And I know that the conversation was certainly that, putting George Fant over on the right side, I think, did put extra motivation there, because I think that, Effetti realized, whoo, here's a guy that can really challenge me for this starting job. And so he did pick up his game. game. Then, unfortunately, gets a little bit of an ankle injury to slow it down a little bit. But now pressure is going to be on Ifedi in this game. And I would imagine, in response to what Mark is saying, that they've got two blocking tight ends, Nick Vinette. They don't have Ed Dixon, and also Will Disley, who's been blocking sensational. And if you heard Pete this week, I mean, he was just raving. And Brian Schottenheimer was raving about the blocking of Will Disley. And so I would anticipate you may see Ifedi there at right tackle, and right next to him being Disley or Vinette to help make the blocking okay, to try to make it a little bit easier. And one of the things, of course, to keep you updated on the National Football League, there's news. And, of course, there's every Friday is going to be a lot of news, which we'll keep you up on. Keanu Neal, the safety, strong safety, not free safety. So if you're wondering about Earl Thomas Trace, he's not a free safety, blew out his ACL last night. And that's now, I think, 28, 29 ACLs that have been blown out so far this year. But that is a major blow to that defense because, I mean, it's the equivalent for them of losing a Cam Chancellor. And so Dan Quinn has to really be feeling bad about that because now for the next 15 weeks, Keanu Neal is not going to be out there and being able to play. As far as signings in the National Football League, Eddie Goldman, defensive tackle for the Bears, just got a four-year, $42 million contract, $8 million or $10.5 million a year with about $20 million guaranteed. I'll say that because it does kind of fit the average of, you know, 2 times 10. And so that means that now they've got Mack locked up. You know, they've got Leonard Floyd locked up. They got about, five or six of their core group defensive players locked up on a defense that last year finished in the top 10. Interesting to see where they're going to go and if they have enough offense to make things going. To give you some, also Stephon Diggs, a safety for Detroit, he ended up getting a deal of about 4 years, $26 million, $6.5 a year. And as far as injuries in the National Football League, and we're starting to come out, the Ravens are going to be without defensive tackle Willie Henry with an abdominal injury. Their starting tight end Hayden Hurst has a foot injury. He's going to be out. Olivier Vernon's not going to be able to play for the Giants. He's going to be out with an ankle injury. Looks like Devontae Parker is the only player on the injury list for the Miami Dolphins. He has a finger injury. He's doubtful for the game. Jacksonville, everybody's healthy. Denver right now, we'll find out if there's going to be any updates on that. Everybody's healthy. For the Carolina Panthers, wide receiver Curtis Samuel has a medical illness, and so he's going to be out. Three players that are questionable, but most likely will play, and that will include Darrell Williams, who has a knee injury. We'll keep updating you on where things go as far as the injury report, but that's some of it right now. All right, getting back to, I think, one of the big questions of this week, and we'll get into that story again on SI, talking about the locker room and where things are, is that what's going to happen with Earl Thomas. And I think that's going to be one of the more curious things that we're going to hear this afternoon from Pete Carroll, to give us an update if he's going to play or not play, where he stands. He's right now on the exempt list. And according to Ian Rappaport, most of the fines, maybe not all of the fines, have been relieved. And so it looks like they are embracing his comeback. And then we'll see if that comeback includes somewhere where he's going to be able to play a lot. And so that's, I think, going to be one of the big things to determine today. And, you know, try to find out, because, again, they'll have to make a roster move, which that's not going to be much of a problem.
I was going to ask, John, because Pete Carroll was on with Dory Monson on our FM station, Cairo FM, this morning, and said that Earl would be a game-time decision, but they'll have to make a roster move before that, correct?
Yeah, the game-time decision would have to be made before 1 o'clock tomorrow, because he's not going to be on the roster if he, and of course, that would be, you know, somebody that went on the guarantee of the contract and all that stuff, but because, you know, once a player is on that active roster on that first game, then, I mean, his $8.5 million base salary is going to be guaranteed, and so they still have to determine that, but I don't know. I mean, that's going to go down to the wire, and I guess it comes down to how he makes it through this practice, because the one concern that you have is that, you know, he gets a hamstring injury or a soft tissue injury, having not been able to play or not having a training camp in that. I mean, it happened with Josh Gordon. It happened with the linebacker Daquan Smith from the Chicago Bears, and so you want to make sure that he can make it through this week. And again, I think his value in a game like this is a lot. Now, again, can he play a whole game? Probably not. But I think that he can really help out this team if he wants to help out this team. And you kind of get the idea now. Maybe they're able to push this thing behind. And again, I kind of wonder where Earl is on the story that came out by SI today that basically said that several players, mostly I think defense, you know, had issues with Pete Carroll giving a free license of non-criticism to Russell Wilson and not doing that. And again, chose the intensity of this team. I thought, because you've been watching what's coming on social media, that I thought it was interesting what you saw from Golden Tate.
Yeah, well, he just quote tweeted the article with a bunch of googly eye emojis. So take that however you will. I don't know if that's agreeance or if that's, wow, I can't believe they said all that, or however you want to take that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know, very curious to see that he's kind of chimed in on that. Because, again, it's getting reaction all through the league. And still, it kind of backs up the Seth Wickersham story, saying that there were problems in the locker room. And I think now we all acknowledge that. And, again, I think it came down to the strong nature of some of the guys on defense, like Richard Sherman, who was very intense and cannot tolerate any kind of losses. He's very analytical in what he says. And I think that he had some issues with Russell and some bad play that, what he wanted, I guess, is to have Russell called out on some of these things. And that didn't happen. But again, it's like, coaches have to treat their players a little bit differently. So that's where it comes down to with Russell Wilson. It comes down to the team. All right. So we're making a little bit of an adjustment here. Tyler Palumbo's was going to join us at the 11 o'clock hour. Bronco practice has gone a little bit later. We'll catch up with him at 11:30. So what we're going to do is we're going to come back and get the report card. We're going to grade what's going on in sports. Then we're going to come back at 11:15 and then do text questions. Tyler will be joining us at 11:30. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.